Good morning, little children. It is March 26th today, 2023. The time is 8:31, Eastern Daylight Time, I think we call it now. It used to be called Daylight Savings Time, of course. I'd sort of forgotten that, but it's actually called Eastern Daylight Time, EDT. Instead of what it used to be, which is DST, and of course, when it's not the time of daylight savings, then it's called Eastern Standard Time, EST, which I believe now it's, we learned this year it was the second Sunday in March, it changes over to Eastern Daylight Time. So the interesting thing about today is I'm in a remarkable state of, it's early morning, I'm wide awake, but I'm in a remarkable state of awareness today because, or wakefulness, seeing as it's, the reason I'm a little surprised is because I did not sleep at all, other than maybe sleeping on my desk a little bit. Here at the computer, I didn't sleep at all for the previous night, before last night. Last night I slept, and I think last night I only slept about 6 hours, but the previous night, no sleep at all, and I'm feeling like normally, well, better than normal, considering, I mean, better than I normally feel when I get no sleep, that's for sure. But last night I didn't really catch up on sleep either, only 6 hours after not having any the night before. And yet I feel not deprived of, I don't feel deprived particularly of sleep. So there's something remarkably good about my health. I still have this sort of mucus in my throat, which is kind of, you know, I don't have to clear my throat as much. But that seems to be either, it's either a sugar reaction, I was talking about this before, or it's caused by the calcium in the cow's milk dairy products, which I get from drinking the cream in my lattes and things like that. I'm not sure if the yogurt does that or not. Maybe it does. And it's not necessarily from the same cows at all. I'm not sure about any of it, actually, but I don't really want to have that sort of reaction to my food where I get phlegm in my throat. I think it's partly genetic, too, because my genetic father had that problem later in his life where he was always swallowing because he had this similar problem in his throat, you know, where he he had to continually clear his throat like that or try to swallow to get it solved, you know, to get the problem to go away. But I'm actually very strong today. I'm very strong, especially considering how little sleep I had. But I'm very strong. I know I'm strong. I'm not weak in terms of my muscle strength and so on. I feel like I have a lot of strength right now. So I'm extremely pleased about my current state of health, but as we know, it's up and down every day. And when I was a young child, I was not always, you know, I wouldn't say I was always sick either, but I was not always healthy. I'm trying to think. I didn't really have allergies when I was a young child. And of course, the allergies I did get more recently went away when I started to learn about this new vitamin K2, which made my allergies disappear, apparently, or forward. That, in combination with everything else that I've been eating recently, the vitamin K2 has made my allergies, it appears, go away. And we're going to have springtime soon. There should be some potential for spring allergies for many people. But I never had the spring allergies so much as I had the autumn hay fever allergies later in my life, just more recently, but not very recently, but just, I mean, last fall, I had no allergies, essentially, which was a whole new recent development after I developed allergies. And I developed allergies, you know, sometime after I learned about calcium. And I was consuming more dairy products and in the awareness of the benefits of calcium, but I was also taking calcium supplements for a good period of time prior to eventually starting to take or eat dairy. So, but I mean, we can't say, well, my health is good today. That's a silly statement. Because tomorrow, I mean, we just can't rely on our health. It could change very quickly. We could be sick tomorrow, you know, it changes. It goes up and down. And as we get older, and I'm getting older, but as we get older, our health becomes much less predictable. It could be, we could develop a new problem any day. As I learned recently about apparently my toxicity experience with vitamin D and my toxicity to vitamin A and my experience and my experience with iodine toxicity all at once, all of these things became important, or, you know, they came into my awareness very recently with regard to how much of these things I can actually consume. And I can't consume as much calcium right now because, well, possibly because I have a lot of vitamin D in my body. But the way to eliminate the vitamin D is not just by waiting for it to leave your body, but to consume vitamin K2, which uses vitamin D. So I don't believe I really did necessarily have any vitamin D buildup. We don't know that. We don't know if my body has vitamin D built up because of the large amount, or relatively large amount, that I was consuming. Because I was also consuming a very large amount of vitamin K2, which has no known toxicity or problems associated with it. It prevents the buildup of vitamin D by creating GLA proteins, which are, I think they're called GLA proteins. They're the proteins that utilize vitamin D, and they, together, the nutrients that you get from consuming vitamin D and vitamin K2 enable the calcium, which is wrongly stored in the joints of the body, such as in arthritis, and also the calcium that's stored in the arteries, wrongly stored in the arteries, causing heart disease, it enables that calcium to leave those places, to be removed from the joints and removed from the arteries and put into the bones where it's supposed to be, of course. And all because you took the correct combination of vitamin K2 and vitamin D, which is, we don't know the exact proportions, which are ideal, perhaps, of how much of each of those we should take. So I was taking an ample amount of both, trying to see whether that would benefit me more than, you know, more than by taking just a small amount of each, or by, you know, I was attempting to see whether more was better with regard to the consumption of both vitamin D and vitamin K2 together. But I wasn't really interested in taking that much vitamin D. It just happened to be already present in the liquid form of vitamin K2. It was a formulation of vitamin K2 that contained vitamin D which forced me to take more of the vitamin D if I wanted to increase my intake of vitamin K2. So that's what happened fairly recently, and then I thought I was experiencing an overdose of vitamin D. But I don't know that I was. It seemed like a calcium elevation in my blood, an elevated calcium, which is called hypercalcemia. The main reason I thought that was, I think the main symptom I had, although I did have stomach upset, that's true. I had nausea. That's right. That was one reason. Yeah, there was more than one reason why I thought I had hypercalcemia. The other one, though, was the frequent urination, which is an uncommon side effect. And it went away quite quickly after I stopped consuming so much calcium and vitamin D. So, and then I found I needed calcium after a few days. I needed to eat calcium again. So right now I'm in a position where I really only want to eat calcium mainly in the morning, and then I want to eat some other things throughout the day. But I think that eventually I'll probably get back to consuming calcium more than once a day. It's just that I have possibly still, I possibly, well, let's, I mean, in the past, I probably did. Recently, my problem probably was an excess of calcium, and therefore I need to go easy on the calcium for a while, you know, for another, you know, who knows, months or years. But maybe for another year I'll be eating in a different pattern with less calcium for the next year, perhaps, even. You know, it could be that much. And we know, I know from my experience, that we know our dietary habits change periodically, or as we get our state of health improved, as we get to a different stage in our maybe we should call it recovery, if we're older and we're trying to recover our health. When we get to a certain stage in our recovery, I'm trying to think what's the other word for it, or what's another word, a stage in development of our health, a stage in improvement. When we're making improvements in our health, it takes a while for our body to adjust to the new improved, you know, conditions inside the body, and it adjusts over time. And once we adjust, we then have to change our eating habits once again. We keep changing our eating habits as we get either sicker or healthier. If we're getting sicker, though, we don't really want to consider that as a goal. Our goal is not to get sicker, so we're considering the goal of getting healthier. And as we get healthier, then we need to consider, how do we change those eating habits? Or just be aware. At least we need to be aware, is what I'm really saying. It's just that we need to be aware that we may have to change our eating habits as we get healthier. And those changes will be beneficial because we're getting healthier. We will not be changing our eating habits in a negative way, but there are many ways that we can just perhaps eat healthier, either by adding better food or reducing the quantity of undesirable foods in our diet, whether that be, you know, undesirable food in the form of, for example, junk food or, you know, processed food or sugar content, you know, that sort of thing. But there are many, or even salt. We could reduce the salt. But at some stage in our life, it might be beneficial to take more salt, or, you know, less salt. Or it's not usually beneficial to take more sugar at any particular stage, but some sugar is required. I love these new dates. The new dates, that I think that's a great way to ensure that your blood sugar doesn't get too low, is to eat something healthy like dates, which are natural sugar. They contain natural sugar. And these particular dates, and I think they probably also help improve the bowel regulation, and so I think that's possible too, because I know the dates we used to eat had that property, but they were not the same kind of dates that I'm eating now. But the dates we used to eat when I was a young boy, that my mother gave us to eat for for the purpose of regulating the bowel, they were not the same dates as what I have now, which what I'm buying now, the MedJewel dates, which I learned about recently from, I guess I learned about them from the chocolate balls that I used to buy that had MedJewel dates in them. So when I reverse engineered the recipe for that, for those chocolate balls, I had to buy MedJewel dates because that was on the label of the ingredients list for the chocolate balls. So I ended up buying MedJewel dates, and I've had them ever since. So, and I love them. Anyway, so Dynasty Akkad to Exodus, Chapter 5 of The Wild Road Ahead to History, Article Part 1. The date of the deluge in Jewish tradition and in the Masoretic tradition of the Bible are different from that we obtained from the Greek Septuagint, the Masoretic version being 2105 BCE, or the Jewish version, I should say, or a little earlier, about 2348, according to Usher, who is a Christian commentator and a chronologer. So this is BCE, about the year 2100 or 2300 BCE, for the deluge date. Now, our deluge date is 3282 BCE, which is 1,000 years, nearly, earlier from the Septuagint. Much proof of the unlikelihood of this late date, which is the late date of 2348 or 2105, stems from the evidence of the early Bronze Age. Which ensued directly after the cataclysmic event itself, the development of the use of bronze, which the evidence of which is, you know, the people would find the Bronze Age implements buried in the ground, or they would find evidence of the ovens where the bronze was manufactured and things like that, the ancient places where these implements were forged, or these bronze weapons or bronze implements were primitively made. But it was only primitive because the deluge wiped out the whole earth. It wiped out all the manufacturing facilities. Whatever was there was gone, so they had to do it from scratch. They had to make everything from very crude beginnings. The early evidence of writing also, which greatly predates these early, or these, they're not early, these late, it greatly predates these later deluge dates. The writing that is in evidence with regard to the early writing is more around 3200 BC, as far as the earliest writing that we know about. It's more like about that date, around the same time as our deluge date, according to the Septuagint. It's not so late. The earliest writing is not as late as 2348 or 2105. Nowhere close. So this early evidence of writing greatly predates those late dates for the deluge and the collated documentary evidence of the Greek Septuagint. Right. So the proof of the unlikelihood of those late dates of the deluge, which are about 2300 or so BCE, the unlikelihood of that comes from the evidence of the early Bronze Age, the early evidence of writing, and the documentary evidence of the Greek Septuagint, which from the generations of the patriarchs, we deduce the chronology and the earlier date of the deluge, 3282, which, you know, proves these later dates wrong. Yet another, so the Greek Septuagint is a major source of proof against those late dates of the deluge. Yet another possible proof comes from a gift made from astronomical records of Babylon after its conquest by Alexander the Great in 331 BCE. That is, Babylon was conquered before that date of 331 BCE. We know Babylon was conquered in 539 BCE, or that's what many of us do believe. But there was a gift from the astronomical records of Babylon after Babylon was conquered. Alexander the Great in 331 BCE made a gift to Aristotle. So this gift, which was reported as having reached Aristotle, is another possible proof, it having spanned 1903 years of observations sequentially prior to that date. So in Babylon's records, there were 1903 years of observations of astronomy prior to the date of 331. So that adds up to being 1903 plus 331, which is 2234 BCE. That would be the beginning of those astronomical records, and would render the deluge date of 2348 too late, allowing, as it does, only 114 years to build Babylon and account for everything else. I mean, it would mean everything else that happened before Babylon also was included in those 114 years. It's a very unlikely thing to expect to fit all the events into those 114 years. On the other hand, many generations preceded the start of the failed Tower of Babel, according to our record. That's the other thing. We know that even before the Tower of Babel, let alone Babylon, which was a much later civilization than the Tower of Babel. It was built in the same area, but it was much later. So many generations preceded even the start of the failed Tower of Babel, on the other hand, according to our record, with the Old Kingdom of Egypt dated to about 2685 BCE, a date which post-dated the reign of Nimrod by 22 years, according to Jackson, he ruling from 2707 BCE, or about 42 years after the birth of Peleg in 2749 of the BCE years in the Blessed Genealogy, which we abbreviate as being 2749 BG. But it means 2749, it's 42 years after the birth of Peleg in 2749 BCE, of the Blessed Genealogy, as we talked about above. The numbers are more accurate than we had expected, as Mr. Jackson gives. Yeah, we didn't expect to really get such great results at all, but because Mr. Jackson gives 395 years, this is further evidence here. Mr. Jackson gives 395 years for the Egyptian period to end 12 years after the Arabian dynasty, which means 2685, if that's the beginning of the Old Kingdom, minus 395 plus 12 minus 161, because there's 12 years, it ends 12 years after the Arabian dynasty, so we have to add back the 12 years. And then begin the dynasty of Akkad, which took 161 years. And when we do that calculation, we get 2141 BCE for the beginning of the Assyrian Empire in that year. This date, 2141, being now firmly fixed in the annals of genealogy as Assyria's start, Abraham, age 65, because 65 added to 2141 is, of course, 2206, which is the birth of Abraham. So all of that just simply says that, well, we it says two things. It says that, first of all, there were too many events that occurred after the deluge and prior to the beginning of these astronomical records, which were given as a gift to Aristotle by Alexander the Great from Babylon, to possibly ever consider that the deluge could have occurred only 114 years prior to those records having their beginning in Babylon, which was in some time period, which is in the middle of the dynasty of Akkad. The dynasty of Akkad is going to be, we're going to talk about it in more detail, but this is about the time, this is right in the midst of the dynasty of Akkad, 2234 BCE. And the dynasty of Akkad was long after the Tower of Babel. As we've talked about already, there were many generations after the Tower of Babel before the dynasty of Akkad. So these dates for the deluge being only about, these are late dates which are wrong, being only about 2200 or 2300 BCE for the deluge. They're wrong. They're too late. They have to be much earlier, and that's where the genealogy actually fulfills that requirement by, you know, being in harmony with the Bible too, by giving the date of 3282 for the deluge. So that's the end of this article study for today, and we're going to talk more about this hopefully tomorrow again with regard to the dynasty of Akkad. So let's go to our study in the Bible today. Hopefully now, I'm glad to get this study accomplished earlier in the day, because I don't like to have to think about it all day long or worry about it and have to remember to do it and be worried that I might forget to do it later in the day. So it's good to get it done early in the morning. But I'm remarkably alert, cogent, awake, you know, very, I feel good. I ate some dates today. They're very sticky, so you have to be concerned about your teeth, I think, when you eat dates. So, but one of the things I've learned about teeth is that, for one thing, I use my own toothpaste, which has the xylitol. It's very simple to make it. I can make it in 5 minutes or less. Just a couple of minutes to just put in a container, you know, fill a container about one-sixth or one-fifth of the way full with baking soda, and then add about, well, more than an equal amount of xylitol. So, but, you know, you could even perhaps add twice as much xylitol as baking soda, but I'm not sure if you need that much. But then you add a little bit, you know, just enough coconut oil to make it all like a paste, to make it become a paste. And that's all you need to do for your toothpaste. And that toothpaste is edible. It doesn't need refrigeration. It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. The only problem is in the summer you have to be careful not to put too much, I mean, it's not a problem, but you have to be careful not to put too much coconut oil if you don't want the toothpaste to be too runny. That's all. But in the wintertime, you need maybe a little more coconut oil because of the fact that it's not going to be runny enough. But it's just, you can store it right on your bathroom countertop, just like you do with normal toothpaste. But it's the best toothpaste that I've ever seen for preventing cavities. It doesn't have any artificial additives, like there's no fluoride, certainly nothing else other than those three ingredients. But also I chewed xylitol gum in between my brushings, which I only really brush once a day. I do actually brush once a day, and brushing is of course only one of the things that I do to care for my teeth, but I do all of my dental care once a day at the time that I do it. And meanwhile, in between my meals, as soon as I've eaten something that's got sugar in it or anything like that sticks to my teeth, anything that makes me concerned. But every time I eat anything, I always, in fact, in every case, after I'm done eating, I chew the xylitol gum, and I chew a good amount of it. I don't just chew one piece of gum. You have to get a certain amount of xylitol in your mouth. So I chew xylitol gum in a very significant amount. And it's not the cheapest. It's not the cheapest yet. So I have to pay. Maybe it costs me $100 every couple of months, or maybe it's $100 a month. I'm not sure exactly how long it lasts. So it's not the cheapest as far as preventing cavities, but it kills all the bacteria in your mouth. So you don't, all the bacteria that cause cavities are killed by the xylitol. You don't, I mean, it seems like it's the best thing that I've ever learned about dental care, which is xylitol. But not only that, the xylitol is actually beneficial for the bacteria in your intestines. Produces the short chain fatty acids in the intestines. So xylitol is a marvelous thing. And we don't know anything negative about it. Maybe we will learn something, but we don't know anything negative about it. So in Genesis 26, now there arose a famine in the land besides the first famine that occurred in the days of Abraham, so that Isaac directed himself to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, to Gerar. I don't know why it didn't say at Gerar, because it's very difficult to read it the other way. So that Isaac directed himself to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, to Gerar. Then Jehovah appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, tabernacle in the land that I shall designate to you. Reside as an alien in this land, and I shall continue with you and bless you, because to you and to your seed I shall give all these lands, and I will carry out the sworn statement that I swore to Abraham your father. Quote, and I will multiply your seed like the stars of the heavens, and I will give to your seed all these lands, and by means of your seed all nations of the earth will certainly bless themselves. End quote. Due to the fact that Abraham listened to my voice and continued to keep his obligations to me, my commands, my statutes, and my laws, so Isaac went on dwelling at Gerar. Well, the men of the place kept asking with respect to his wife, and he would say, she is my sister, for he was afraid to say my wife, for fear that, to quote him, the men of the place should kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance. So it came about that as his days there extended themselves, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, was looking out of the window and taking in the sight, and there was Isaac having a good time with Rebekah, his wife. At once Abimelech called Isaac and said, why, she is no other than your wife. So how is it that you said she is my sister? At this Isaac said to him, I said it for fear I should die on her account. But Abimelech continued, what is this you have done to us? A little more, and certainly one of the people would have lain down with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. Then Abimelech commanded all the people, saying, anybody touching this man and his wife will surely be put to death. Afterward, Isaac began to sow seed in that land, and in that year he was getting up to 100 measures to one. That means one part seed. 100 measures, 100 bushels of produce to one measure of seed, or one bushel of seed would produce 100 bushels of fruitage. As Jehovah was blessing him, consequently the man became great and went on advancing more and more and growing great until he got very great. And he came to have flocks of sheep and herds of cattle and a large body of servants, so that the Philistines began to envy him. As for all the wells that the servants of his father had dug in the days of Abraham his father, these the Philistines stopped up, and they would fill them with dry earth. Finally, Abimelech said to Isaac, move from our neighborhood, because you have grown far stronger than we are. So Isaac moved from there and encamped in the torrent valley of Gerar, and took up dwelling there. And Isaac proceeded to dig again the wells of water that they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, but which the Philistines went stopping up after Abraham's death. And he resumed calling their names by the names that his father had called them. And the servants of Isaac went on digging in the torrent valley, and so they found there a well of fresh water. And the shepherds of Gerar fell to quarreling with the shepherds of Isaac, saying, "The water is ours." Hence he called the name of the well Esek, because they had contended with him. And they went digging another well, and they fell to quarreling over it also. Hence he called its name Sitnah, which means accusation. Esek means contention. Later he moved away from there and dug another well, but they did not quarrel over it. Hence he called its name Rehoboth, meaning broad places. And said, he said, "It is because now Jehovah has given us ample room and has made us fruitful in the earth." Then he went up from there to Beersheba. And Jehovah proceeded to appear to him during that night and to say, "I am the God of Abraham your father. Do not be afraid, because I am with you, and I will bless you and multiply your seed on account of Abraham my servant." Accordingly, he built an altar there and called on the name of Jehovah and pitched his tent there, and the servants of Isaac went excavating a well there. Later on, Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, his confidential friend, and Phicol, the chief of his army. At this, Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, seeing that you yourselves hated me and so sent me away from your neighborhood?" To this they said, "We have unmistakably seen that Jehovah has proved to be with you. Hence we said, let please an oath of obligation occur between us and you, and let us conclude a covenant with you that you will do nothing bad toward us, just as we have not touched you, and just as we have done only good toward you, in that we sent you away in peace. We sent you away in peace. Now you now are the blessed of Jehovah." Then he made a feast for them, and they ate and drank. Next morning they were early in rising, and they made sworn statements one to the other. After that Isaac sent them away, and they went from him in peace. Now on that day it occurred that the servants of Isaac proceeded to come and report to him regarding the well that they had dug, and to say to him, "We have found water." Hence he called its name Sheba, or Sheba. That is why the name of the city is Beersheba down to this day. And Esau grew to be 40 years old. Then he took as wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and also Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. They were both Hittites, actually. And they were a source of bitterness of spirit to Isaac and Rebekah. Okay, not that... Well, yeah. It was because of the religious practices of the Hittites, of course, that made them undesirable to Abraham's family, because they had gods which were made of wood and stone. They were idol gods. They worshipped idols instead of worshipping Jehovah. They were not worshippers of Jehovah, and that's why they were less than desirable, certainly far less than desirable. They were a source of bitterness, because we know that the difference between worshippers of Jehovah and worshippers of false gods are quite large differences in the way people live and the way they act, the way they treat one another. But the way they treat their own bodies, for example, people use and abuse substances, or they modify their bodies with markings or all sorts of things, you know. But I mean, we all know about these things even nowadays, but we saw the example. Even the family of Abraham, they wore bracelets and they wore nose rings and things like that. We don't know specifically what they did with regard to whether they pierce their bodies or not, it's not mentioned. But we know piercings are not desirable either. We learn about that later on, but it seems it's very much the sort of thing that we could know about it without knowing about Jehovah. The piercing, we could know this without ever reading the Bible, that piercings are not good. To modify the body is not good. We just know it based on our instinct. Instinct tells us not to modify our body. So that didn't find it. Hang on a second here. Well, they did do piercings, that's right. Because in Ezekiel, they were allowed to do piercings because... But this is in ancient times, right? His master brought him up against the door, and the master pierced his ear through with an awl as a sign of making him his slave, Ezekiel 21:6. So, yes, of course, they did have piercings, so that was acceptable, clearly, in ancient times it was acceptable, but... they were not allowed to make cuttings. I know that. They were not allowed to do that. At some point in the cutting, there's a cuttings, I think. Yes, in Deuteronomy 14:1, they were not allowed to make cuttings upon themselves. You must not make cuttings upon yourselves, Deuteronomy 14:1. And that was in addition to imposing baldness on themselves, on their foreheads, for a dead person. So these cuttings might have been for a dead person that they would cut themselves. But that's not what Jehovah's people did. It's what some people did. Some nations did that sort of thing. That's why it was forbidden specifically in the law of Moses, which was to prevent... to prevent Jehovah's people from doing it. Some people did it. It's evident from that it was something that was fairly common. It was necessary to make this specific prohibition here in the law of Moses in Deuteronomy. You must not make cuts in the flesh for a deceased soul, from Leviticus also. And you must not put tattoo markings upon yourselves, also in Leviticus 19:28. So it does seem clear that, you know, piercings of the body, I mean, clearly you could call that also, you could consider that as a cut. It seems it's a very... And also, a tattoo marking is also a piercing. You have to pierce the skin to make the tattoo marking, generally too. So it seems like piercings are a very... it's never explicit in terms of prohibiting piercings in the Bible, as far as I can tell. At least not from that. But we would have to do... No, but that's just a very cursory research. We just did a very brief research. Let's see. Let me look it up. On the internet in general, if I look it up, what does the Bible say about piercings? Yeah, it doesn't ever specifically say anything, according to this one website, Christianity.com. He gave her a gold nose ring. We know that. Rebecca was given a gold nose ring. Okay. That's right. That's right, it does mention it. That's right, Isaiah. So that was Micah 5:1 about not making cuttings upon yourself, it said. Micah 5:1. But Isaiah, let's go to Isaiah. This is Isaiah chapter 3. I think we're going to learn something here. I remember this too, now that it's been mentioned. Yes, it is specific that piercings are not approved either, because Jehovah allowed it, but he didn't approve it. And the reason we know that is because Isaiah 3:18, in that day, Jehovah will take away the beauty of the bangles and the headbands, and the moon-shaped ornaments, the eardrops, and the bracelets and the veils. Why is he going to take all that away? Even the nose rings, in verse 21, he'd take away the nose rings. Right. Right. Well, we remember the scripture that all things are lawful, but not all things are advantageous. So why is it advantageous to make a piercing? You'd have to wonder about that. Are you doing it? What's your motivation too? Like, what are you making a piercing because because other people do it? Because would you ever have thought of the idea of making a piercing if it weren't for fashion? Or, I mean, it doesn't seem likely you'd pierce your body. On your own, by your own choice, if you weren't under some kind of pressure to do it because other people were doing it, it's a very unlikely prospect that someone would pierce themselves. So, at least not if they were, healthy and happy. Why would they? Why would you? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It just risks all sorts of... Well, I mean, piercing the skin always risks infection no matter what. But, I mean, not that we don't understand how to prevent infection, but it's just not a good idea to pierce the skin. Yeah, I mean, it's not simple either, right? In the idea of, with regard to keeping our eyes simple, keeping things simple, it's not the simplest thing. To pierce some part of your body is not the simplest way to live. It's going to make some complexity. It's going to add some complexity. It's not the simplest way. It's not the remaining free either. In order to remain free to do anything, you need to abstain from making alterations. That's the way in which you remain free. So if you're free of any alterations, then you still have the freedom to make whatever alterations are necessary. And once you make an alteration, you lose some of the freedom. So it's got to do with the concept of freedom, as I've discussed previously. But here Jehovah says he will take away these certain items of jewelry which may have been involved with piercings. Why was he going to take that away? For the reason that the daughters of Zion have become haughty. That's why, in verse 16. So that was Isaiah 3:16. Interesting. So So that's the thing about piercings, is they typically do result from vanity, from the idea that someone wants to look what in a way they want to appear in a way that is more to them or to society more attractive, because they wear certain forms of jewelry which appear attractive in the society in which they live, which are just fashion trends, right? Things that have to do with fashion and with vanity, you know, with self-idolatry, you know, with making yourself not really appearing more attractive, not really making yourself any more attractive at all, but making yourself appear more attractive in, according to the convention of the society in which you live, or according to the fashion trends in the society in which you live, which are really nothing to do with beauty and have nothing to do with Jehovah or with the concept of what is really beautiful. It's just got to do with fashion, which is, it changes. Fashion changes from one time to another. So anything which is pressured upon people because of the pressure of society in terms of fashion, and that is the same thing with any other practices too, which are not to do with fashion. Any pressures put upon people to use substances or do anything merely because it's done by other people, or because it's considered popular or common or whatever the reason, those pressures also have nothing to do with what Jehovah finds pleasing, you know, or with what Jehovah would have us do. He doesn't pressure us to do any of those things. He doesn't think it's beautiful to wear jewelry. That's not what Jehovah thinks. He doesn't think it's beautiful or wise to use any kind of substances either that are merely used for popularity, you know, or for the purpose of entertainment, or, you know, for the purpose of recreation, you know, recreational substances. Those things are not of any value to Jehovah. Although, you know, we have to exclude the things that Jehovah explicitly mentions. I mean, he says wine. He mentions wine. Wine is mentioned in the Bible. Wine that makes the heart of mortal man rejoice, right? So, some people certainly have used wine for many, many, many generations and many centuries. People have used wine as a substance, as a beverage that they've used to what's the word? I'm not sure. Why do people drink wine? It's not everybody that, we're not required to, that's for sure. That's the thing, nobody's required to drink wine. That's important to recognize. But Jehovah's given it to mankind as a way to relieve some of the stresses of everyday life and so on. So wine is not unacceptable. Perhaps, I mean, it hasn't been up till now anyway, but I mean, we can't really say to other people what they should or shouldn't do anyway. There's no way to prohibit people from doing all these things. That's what freedom is. We have the freedom to do anything. Anyone can do anything, but what's the advantage is the question. And if drinking wine is not to your advantage because you work around the clock most days, and you can't take the time, you know, that it takes to recover from drinking wine, which it does take time to recover from it, or from using any other substance, it takes time to recover. If you don't have the time to spend recovering, and you are in a constant state of working all the time, apart from, you know, your 1 in 7 minutes that you take for holiday or relaxation. But if you don't have that extra time you need to recover from using recreational things, or doing recreational things, you know, whatever, I guess you could say too. I'm not sure. Like if I took a holiday, it would take, if I went on a holiday, we used to say, we'd go to Florida, we'd come back, and it would take, you know, 2 weeks to recover from the holiday. That's what we used to say, like, you know, no matter how long the holiday was. It took a long time to recover from a holiday because it throws everything completely out of kilter. It makes everything different when you get back home. But there aren't necessarily advantages to anything. It's up to each person to determine that. But there shouldn't be pressure put on people to make certain decisions about what jewelry they wear or what, you know, what. It's not a, shouldn't be a pressure thing. It shouldn't be a matter of trying to pressure anyone. This is part of our freedom that we have. So, but in order to remain free, it's necessary to not do anything that restricts freedom. And anything where you modify your body, you've then restricted the freedom you then have after that to modify it or do anything, right? You've restricted freedom when you modify something. So it's the same with using substances. You restrict your freedom when you use a substance that modifies what's going on in your body. You've modified the internal part of your body when you take a substance. So we want to take, I mean, speaking as a person who loves freedom, we want to take the substances that maintain our freedom by giving us maximum health and give us the maximum mightiness that we can have, the maximum ability to be responsive and adaptive and energetic and healthy and wise and spontaneous and powerful, all these beautiful, wonderful, fantastically, you know, marvelous things, these qualities that we have as humans when we have our health. And so I think that's all for today. It's still March 26th, 2023, 0929 hours Eastern Daylight Time. My name's Ward Green. I'm very happy to have you with us today. Little children, I hope you've enjoyed this, and please have a wonderful day. Enjoy the life that has been given to us from the Almighty and one true God, Jehovah, and learn about His Son, Jesus, the Anointed One. Remember to seek first the kingdom of Jehovah, and all these other things will be added to us. I love you. Have a wonderful day once again, or night. Praise Jehovah. God bless you. Bye for now.